Chronicles now transmitting.
Welcome to the Tate Chronicles on Healthcare Now Radio. And now, here's your host, Jim Tate.
Good day, citizens of the free world. From border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea, I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning in to the Tate Chronicles. Joining me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare technology. Our mission is clear. We're searching for beneficial disruption in healthcare from emerging technologies and processes. I'm very pleased today to welcome my guest, Daniel Collin. Daniel is the Global Lead Healthcare Industry Solutions at Hewlett-Packard. Daniel, welcome aboard.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim.
It's very timely that we are speaking now, Daniel. One of the buzzwords this year, and almost everywhere I turn in healthcare, I see an article or a conversation or a blog post, something about clinician burnout. So let's kind of just start there. How would you define what clinician burnout is?
Yeah, you bet, Jim. So I guess what I'd like to do is define it first from a clinical perspective and then truly a global perspective, because this is a global challenge. So from a clinical perspective, you know, nurses and physicians, we went into being healthcare providers to see patients and truly to see, you know, the impact that we can have. There's great satisfaction, even though from a nurse, you know, it is somewhat of a thankless job, but internally we get great satisfaction in providing care to patients. And what's happened, and it's really escalated to the point of crisis, is when we move to the adoption of technology, specifically electronic medical records, so moving from patient paper charting to an EMR, the challenge was is a lot of these technologies were not designed from a clinical perspective. And in addition to that, they were combined with very metric-driven, compliant-driven checkboxes. So we moved from really, you know, face-to-face patient engagement to sitting in front of a computer that is now a barrier between you and the patient, completing all of these questions so that you can be compliant with CMS for reimbursement. And that really took a toll when it comes to the amount of time we moved to administrative tasks versus seeing patients and getting that satisfaction. And so that care provider burnout model, it was like this paradox of IT where, you know, we had this idea of, hey, if we can have everything in a digital format for the whole care team, then clearly we should be able to provide better, you know, a better clinical decision support model. And what's happened, you know, is we have just an access to more patients receiving healthcare in the U.S., which is wonderful, right? So more patients have access to healthcare. The challenge is these patients, though, are an aging population with chronic diseases, so non-communicable diseases, multiple high-risk patients. So they have access to care, and yet we are tasked with more administrative tasks. And then we also have a shortage. So I think, you know, off the top of my head, I believe I'd have to pull up the study though, Jim, but
sure.
So you can't quote me exactly, but by about 2030, there'll be 120,000 shortage of U.S. physicians,
wow,
which is pretty significant. And then we can say the World Health Organization, they're saying 44%, there are not enough trained clinicians. So that's like literally having less than one physician per 1,000 people. And so that's really driven to this care provider burnout, right? Is if you have too much on your plate, right?
Right.
You can't see patients. There's this, you know, why am I doing what I do? And then there's this exodus of clinicians leaving the bedside and going into other fields entirely. And so it's kind of come to this crisis. And that's why we hear all these buzzwords, right, of clinician burnout.
You touched on a few things there, Daniel, and I'd like to unpack them a little bit. The first part is
sure.
Just the technology itself. There was a time not too long ago where a provider would have an interaction or with a patient, and then they would go write some notes or maybe dictate a note, one or the other. Now, with the EHRs, the documentation is required. So what was done for literally hundreds of years by, you know, writing down things in you know, a span of 10 or 15 years is done away with, and it's keyboards or maybe somebody's using a tablet or something like that. And so one thing that many providers tell me, certainly providers who've been in the care field for some time, is that they feel like they have become data entry people, and they were never data entry people to begin with. So there's probably a cultural shift taking place from people who were not raised in this kind of technology to technology forced upon them, which could by itself certainly do burnout, no doubt about that. And one of the factors of EHR is to take that documentation as a basis, as you mentioned, for codifying for reimbursement. And so they're becoming data input and almost reimbursement coders in some ways, which has never been part of the process before. So that's a big thing. Another part that you mentioned there had to do with the types of patients that are being seen. When a patient is younger and maybe he's having a strep throat, maybe there's one medication, not a lot going on, but as the population ages, if you're taking care of an older population, they have more chronic diseases. So certainly the encounters take longer and are more complex. So I think there's a couple of issues there. What would drive individuals not entering the field for a career? You kind of mentioned that, you know, we're losing people, but we're not having enough people coming in. Is it just because there's an imbalance between the aging population who's going to need care and the number of caregivers available? What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jim. So the American Physicians Association completed a survey last year. They do this every year. And two significant things or items came out of that, which was really a first that we're starting to see. So the first was part of the survey, 49% of physicians are not recommending that their children go into medicine. That's significant, 49%. And to put this into scale, this survey was responded by tens of thousands of physicians. So it's not like a small population of subjects that responded. The second thing is when it comes to going into this field, you know, if you're hearing right from coworkers or people that are already in the field saying how hard it is when it comes to the technology, and more importantly, you know, really saying, and this is people being subjective, right? Is, hey, my job isn't what it used to be. I'm not being patient anymore. It almost climaxes into even more people not going to those fields. And so, you know, we will start to see changes when it comes to providing care. I mean, we're seeing this already, which is amazing. So telehealth. So if patients, you know, clearly they can see a physician consult and they can interact with their physician and not have to come into an office itself. So that's that is certainly making up a little bit of the difference, I think. But when it comes to the ability for us to transform healthcare, I mean, we really got to see a shift to truly proactive management of our population. And then secondarily, you know, the technology can't just be made, no offense, but by people that are program coders or software management application vendors. It needs to be really this well thought out, really purpose built technology that you get insights from clinicians. What is the real problem we're trying to solve? What's the impact it's having? And then the solution needs to be really driven around that from IT working specifically with clinicians instead of it being pushed upon them. And then vice versa. You know, clinicians have to work with IT. Absolutely. Or enterprise-wide solution providers. Mm-hmm.
You know, what that thing that you mentioned, Daniel, has to do with the, I guess for lack of a better term, that healthcare delivery from a clinician standpoint may not be as rewarding as it once was, just from an emotional standpoint. I know certainly a lot of internal medicine, primary care, and quite a few of the specialists may see 25 or 30 patients a day. Now, a generation ago, I don't know how many patients were being seen a day, but if in 8 to 10 hours you're seeing 25 to 30 patients, that by itself is stressful, very stressful, because and I was involved with a large pulmonary practice for a number of years, and I saw the stress go up as you have a complicating encounter with a patient. You get behind, people are waiting for you, you know they're waiting for you, it makes for a very stressful day. So that makes for less satisfaction of the job. But then also this move of from kind of general medicine to specialized medicine, not even necessarily to the board certified specialist, but there was a time that if you went in your hospital, your primary physician would come see you in the hospital. In many areas now, if you go in the hospital, your doctor's not going to see you. You're going to be turned over to a hospitalist who's going to take care of you in the hospital. Now, from a clinical standpoint, that may be good. But from an emotional standpoint, both for the patient and their primary clinician, that's probably not as satisfying as a continuity of care of knowing who's taking care of you. What do you think are some of the possible workflows? And you mentioned telehealth as one technology, but some of the different workflows and technologies that can begin to address this issue.
Sure. Yeah, you bet. So like as I mentioned earlier, Jim, when it comes to building technology for healthcare, health systems and vendors or manufacturers of technologies, sorry, or manufacturers of software solutions really need to, I feel, take a stand and step up. If they're going to participate in providing a solution for an improved patient encounter, right, or being able to help a clinician with improving their workflow, you know, you can't really do it just for itself, for its own sake, is because it's, oh, wow, look at this cool technology. It needs to be really meaningfully well thought out. And I think a lot of companies jump into this healthcare space because they see an opportunity without really gaining those insights from care providers, from health systems that are doing the day-to-day work. So when it comes to HP, we really are taking a different approach, and we're a global manufacturer for technology. And the approach that we take is we stop and we listen to our clients. We have a healthcare advisory council that's comprised of health systems in the U.S. and in Canada, and we're expanding that in Europe. These are the largest health systems in the U.S. and Canada and globally. And what we've done is we've really been able to co-develop, which is really exciting, the ability of technology that can improve clinical workflows and clearly then provide face-to-face patient time back to the clinician. So a quick example would be, you know, when we started introducing computers into the work field in healthcare, that was a huge pain point because now a physician or a nurse, and now we have nurse practitioners, is they have to manually log in to the Windows desktop session, then to the EHR, and then all of these other applications. And then we introduced a technology called single sign-on technology, which is great. That helped a lot. But the challenge is then you have all of these accessories, right? So as a clinician, you're like, okay, where do I tap my badge? Is it on the side? Oh, shoot, the card reader's not working when I tap it. How do I know it's working or not? So you add that frustration. And so what we've done at HP is we've really taken the approach of building our devices purposeful for healthcare. So working with an Imprivata, working with a Cerner, which is an EMR, and really taking to task, getting that input from our healthcare advisory council, which are clinical executives, so physicians, radiologists, clinical pharmacists that participate. We have chief digital officers, chief medical officers, chief nursing officers, and getting that so that you can have a device that's purpose-built, it's integrated, you can walk up to it and have a meaningful experience. So you just tap the device with your badge, you can pull up your patient chart, you can complete that, and then your workflow can follow you. So, you know, printing still exists; it will continue for patient education. You know, that patient population I mentioned earlier, right? 10,000 Americans becoming 60 every day. They want a piece of paper. They want to have that patient education held in their hands. So, what we've done is that been able to have that workflow follow the clinician, so then they can go up to any HP Healthcare Edition multifunction printer, use that same ability just to tap, and it will release that patient education. So that's a real simple example of what we've done is changing and building devices with an integrated hardware and software and getting the insights from clinicians that are using this software, using this technology every day.
That's a perfect example of technology solving a problem related to technology single sign-on. I've been in provider offices where I've seen a provider have to sign into a computer, then into the EHR if they want to download some data from a health information exchange. It's another sign-on. Mm-hmm. If they want to pull up a radiographic image from the hospital, it's another sign-on. So anything mm-hmm. that can do to streamline those workflows, there's no doubt is helpful. You know, kind of going back to some of the other challenges that I see that have happened, I guess, over the last 10 years or so, and you brought up earlier, Daniel, is the compliance and regulations that are tied to reimbursement, especially around Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got this shift from fee for service to fee for value. Quality measures are being tracked. You not only are making sure that you're documenting which is items that are necessary for the healthcare around a particular patient encounter, but you're also having to do another layer of documentation to make sure certain things are boxes are checked, essentially, to make sure that appropriate reimbursement is gained. I don't know where we're going to be 10 years from now. You know, that's the real question. We have a generation who graduated from different clinical educational environments, really before computers were widespread. They've had computers thrust upon them. They've had to adapt to, you know, maybe we're in the second generation of technology that's invaded the clinical space. And by the time we get to the third or fourth generation, we'll be in a much better position, hopefully, with such things as you mentioned, as single sign-on, things like that. Certainly telehealth, you know, anything that can cut down the number of encounters a provider, you know, if they're seeing ambulatory patients come in the door, anything that can cut down on the number of actual encounters they have, I personally think it'd be a good thing. You talk to providers, just like the number one thing they say, how many patients they see. My own provider will often use a scribe, somebody who's is, you know, handling the input into the EHR of the provider is, you know, directly in an encounter with me. You know, that's another layer of expense, and many providers cannot afford that, but you've seen some kind of go that route. You see scribes. I'm not sure where we will be 5 or 10 years from now or where we're in the trajectory of all this thing, but definitely the issues around burnout are real. All you have to do is talk to clinicians. You kind of hope we're at some kind of pivot point where the real underlying causes are starting to be addressed. I mean, do you think we're at that point yet, or are we still just finding out what's causing these problems?
Great question. Yeah, great question, Jim. So, like you said, moving from fee-for-service healthcare to truly value-based healthcare, you know, there definitely does have to be the ability to provide some type of incentivization for either a health system or a physician to move to that model, right? And with that in mind, like you said, there's some that, you know, they have scribes, and we're seeing that more and more, even in ED, you know, when you're moving, if it's a trauma or you're just coming into the ED, there's a scribe that'll follow the physician to take away that administrative task. When it comes to that value-based model, we have this world that we have too much data, right? Like it's unmanageable. And unfortunately, because as we know, these EMR applications that were developed, unfortunately, they're not interoperable. So if I'm in a health system and, you know, I go travel, and let's say I'm a member of a health system in California, and I travel to the east and I'm not in the health system, more than likely they're going to have another EMR, and that data can't be shared. And that's a big challenge. So moving to value-based care, and as value-based patients populations increase, you know, a lot health systems might only have 5 or 8% this year for those contracts, but they're going to continue to increase. And so the challenge will be, you know, to ensure that there's technology that can kind of really pull out that locked data, the data that's really on, you know, it's really on PDFs that are like scanned into a patient record. So if you have two patients, both with type 2 diabetes, one that's hypertensive, one that's not, that additional information is really, really important to be able to pull out and to be able to have that data then be actionable by the clinician, and then really tie that to the reimbursement that's going to be provided back to the health system. So that's one area. The other area is looking at how can technology help with things like surgical procedure, so surgical times. We're starting to see a huge shift towards virtual reality, which is, it's really starting to see a change in healthcare, which is exciting. And HP playing a huge role in that for preoperative planning, informed consent for patients so they can see truly, you know, what's going to happen throughout their entire procedure. And then tying that also, which is really exciting, is we're at the point with 3D print, and we can truly print the anatomical model of a pediatric patient with, let's say, a critical condition a complex procedure. And it kind of provides a GPS for that surgeon, that as a whole team, they can sit, they can feel, they can touch the anatomical model and even practice on it with the different types of materials that can be printed. So why that's important is it reduces OR, the OR time. It truly reduces the complexity for orthopedics, you know, like getting a knee replacement. They're not taking your femur to fit your joint, right? They're actually, it's a perfect fit. And so, you know, moving to this value-based care models is looking at relying or leveraging technology so that you have a better patient outcome. And there's tons of studies now that we're starting to see, from 3D print to virtual reality to natural language processing. That's like extraction of contextual data that's coming from paper or being faxed in or however it's being transmitted. And then having AI do the work instead of a human. And so I think we are at that point, Jim, where it's exciting to see.
Yeah, we're definitely at as I mentioned earlier, a pivot point where some of these very advanced technologies are really hopefully arriving at the point of care. So we'll see some real potential efficiencies that come through. It's hard to believe, but we have totally run out of time, Daniel. But I do want to mention, for folks who want more information about HP's healthcare solutions, the 800 number is 1-800-820-5591, or website is hp.com/go/healthcare. And to our audience, thanks for joining me on this episode of the Take Chronicles. I offer a special salute to my guest, Daniel Colling of HP. Daniel, thanks for coming aboard today.
Thanks for having me, Jim. Really appreciate it. It was a great conversation.
I enjoyed it. You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.
Tate Chronicles transmission ending now.